Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hello, I'm Susan Violante. I'm your host for today. I'm really excited to be speaking on the phone with author, journalist, and social chaologist L.K. Samuels. His book, In Defense of Chaos, is definitely a must-read for curious minds. Samuels presents on this book chaos theory on an understandable language for non-scientific readers. Furthermore, he presents how chaos theory applies to social sciences such as politics and economics, filled with examples to make it visual within any reader's mind. But before we start, let's learn a little bit more about Samuels. L.K. Samuels is the author of the newly published book In Defense of Chaos, The Chaology of Politics, Economics, and Human Action. He is editor and contributor, author of Facets of Liberty, an anthology of political and economic writings from 1969 to 2009. For more information on L.K. and his book, visit his website at www.lksamuels.com, and that is lksamuels.com. Hi, L.K., how you doing today?
I'm doing fine.
Thank you so much for being with us. I have to be honest, I'm really, really excited to be here talking to you, and I think I might be even in trouble after I saw all your background. But I did review your book. I'm a political science major in South America and had even a professor that was very interested in chaos and talked a lot about it, and that's how my interest sparked. So when I saw your book, and for our listeners, your book's title is In Defense of Chaos, and it can be found at www.lksamuels.com. I was very excited to start that book and was not disappointed at all. I feel I've learned so much from it. My question to you is, why chaos? What is it that inspired you to write a book about chaos theory?
Well, chaos is important because, you know, when I started to get involved in this back in the 1980s, I was looking for a way to show that open systems, evolutionary systems, systems are not rigid, work better than you know, the deterministic, linear, the ones that were rigid, basically. You know, you had to do this, you know, kind of the imposed order from top down. And I thought maybe this would provide scientific evidence saying that, you know, that this kind of system works, that open freedom works. So just studying it, I found out basically you can't have order without chaos. The whole, you know, chaos is basically when you do something for the first time. You've never been to Russia, you go first time, it's kind of chaotic. It is kind of turbulence. It, you know, you have some disorder. But if you keep going back to Russia every time, you know, like every year or something like that, you've created order. Order is nothing but a repetition of patterns. But you got to do it the first time before you can have the order. And so all of a sudden, this whole area came up to show that, you know, systems work better if they're freed, if they're not tied down with a lot of controls, a lot of taxes, a lot of, you know, just people saying, hey, I want it this way. Well, reality may not be that way, but I want it this way no matter what. And I was seeing how systems were gumming up, controlled systems. Systems are what I call structured order versus unstructured order, that they were hurting society. They were hurting systems.
Mm-hmm. And it is inspiring the way that you presented this theory, because you made it very understandable to the average Joe and Jill, and just like me. So because you apply it not just in scientific terms, you have very visual examples of things because you use either movie, you mentioned your Jurassic Park in your book, and at the same time, though, you're applying it to social factors, social life and communities and politics and economics and things that affect our day-to-day lives. So my question to you is, where did this ideal, I looked at your background, and I know that you are a peace activist, and you not only were part of organizations that talk about liberty, but also founded.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of the old classical liberal, basically, the, you know, Jeffersonian, Lockean liberal, not the current modern liberal nowadays, is they're quite different. And I've been involved in a lot of peace activities. You know, I've organized a lot of rallies during the Bush era and a few in the Obama years. It kind of goes with it. If you believe in letting people do what they want to do more, as long as they don't hurt anybody, you're going to be basically for peace. You don't want to go to another area and say, hey, you got to do this, or you did this to me, even though you didn't do anything to me. Like with Iraq War, you know, we didn't. They didn't attack us or anything. They were going around taking over other countries. Didn't make any sense. It's kind of a strange warlike system that causes disruption, causes disorder. In fact, when government gets involved in something, there's a term. There's even a book out there. It's called planned chaos. And you see a lot of this planned chaos because government has determined that this is what order is. They impose it, but they don't know what it is because it changes. Order and chaos, it evolves. Things evolve. So here they're saying, okay, this is how order is going to be, and you better do it this way or we'll put you in jail or, worst case scenario, we'll shoot you. And that's kind of what the Iraq War was kind of like. They're trying to impose liberty on a people that's never had it. And I don't know if it's exactly working. I hope that answers the question.
It does. And actually, you're bringing something up that I wanted to ask about. So there is a difference. There's different types of chaos. There is the chaos that comes natural, and there is the man-made chaos, if you will.
That's correct. What is called a structured order versus unstructured order. Or the unstructured order would be known also as spontaneous order. You know, how do things emerge? That's a whole chapter, self-organizing systems. How do systems all of a sudden develop when it was never there before? You know, people or elements come together, and they create a structure. And they were there because they want it. It's like an organization. You know, maybe an organization is working on breast cancer or something like that. And these people come together and they want to, you know, raise money for breast cancer. Well, if an external organization comes from outside and says, you can't do it anymore. You got to do it a different way. You got to do it for now, you know, for some other disease or something. Or you can't do this, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, and pretty soon the system bifurcates. It goes extinct or it gets distorted into something it was never meant to be.
Yes, and, even if you put in, I was talking to one of my customers the other day, and she was telling me a story of her little community in Honduras. And it surprised me because I thought about your theory, the chaos book, because she was talking about this orphan that had no parents that were available to take care of him. And instead of going through the channels that you would have to go, the little community just organized itself to care for this child. And there's no paperwork, but the baby ended up in a home with a mother and a father that was, taking care of him. And the supplies, when needed, were produced by the community. And there's no regulation, no structure that was organized in paper for this to happen.
Well, I've been in the real estate field, and I know some bankers, old bankers, that actually made loans to people, this is a long time ago, with just a shake of a hand.
Well, yeah, you don't see that much going on.
You don't see that much anymore, but those bankers are still around. These are small little, savings and loans, something like that. But, yeah, they know the people in the community, and if they, need a loan, they're willing to do it on a shake of a hand.
Wow.
I mean, it's just that kind of trust, that kind of, system that's very open and very flexible. It's not coming from, 3,000 miles away telling someone what to do down here. I have a whole chapter on decentralization. You know, people at the local level know more about their situation than people further away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I mentioned about Hayek mentioned that in his famous article, The Use of Knowledge. Knowledge is not centralized. People don't know what's going on. That's why the Soviet Union failed. The central command didn't know what was happening out in the regions. and started to produce things that people didn't need.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of waste, a lot of cheating, and eventually, if you don't have correct information, how can you control the future, or maybe I shouldn't say control the future, how you plan for the future if the information is all wrong?
Yeah. That's a very good example when it comes to politics as well, because my parents, they both grew up under Mussolini in Italy.
Oh, I've done some stories on Mussolini. Don't get me on that. but Mussolini, you know, pretty well socialized his economy by the end of World War, before the beginning of World War II. He was more socialized than any country were except the Soviet Union. He was a friend of Lenin. He called himself the Lenin of Italy. I mean, he was very much into controlling, you know, everything within the state, everything, nothing outside the state.
Yeah, I actually even still have a textbook, a history textbook, that came out. It was like the first edition after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And there is still some, if you may, incorrect history, world history in that mm-hmm. book, to show just so much where how the control even was creating in the school system. You know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, generalized centralized governments don't want independent education. They want to control it, propagandize.
Yeah.
That's the first thing the National Socialists in Germany did when Hitler took over in 1933
mm-hmm.
is to nationalize all of the educational systems, things that were still private, because he has to control all the information so he can control the people.
Yeah, and that's what Chavez was doing in Venezuela, where I was born and raised.
My wife was lived there for 15 years when she was young in Caracas.
Wow. Yeah.
And she liked to go back, but it's kind of dangerous.
Yeah, and you can't go yet. I'll let you know. Yeah, no, we can't go there yet. But that's the first thing. So that shows what you were talking about when it comes to not knowing. Because in my father's stories, when he talks about it, is that's when, you know, when he realized, when the Americans got there and he saw that the army was made out of Americans, black, Native American, mm-hmm. There were Asians in there, and he even saw Italians coming to fight in Italy, against Italy,
mm-hmm.
it was a big surprise. Because it was a big surprise, because the idea that they have of the outside world was not a unified, even though maybe there was still there were still a lot of racial issues in the U.S. What they saw was a unified ethnical front against Italy.
Yes, well, not against Italy, against Mussolini. It's you know, these wars. It's not the Germans against Italians.
No.
It's a horrible government fighting another.
But they didn't know this. The idea that they had of who the enemy was totally wrong.
Well, they got to change it. I mean, we did the same thing in World War II. We were calling the Japanese subhuman.
Mm-hmm.
Both sides were doing it, and now it's harder to have wars. Because back then, people rarely traveled. Now, with all the traveling, you can go to Japan, you can go to Russia and say, my God, these people are almost like us. Well, you know, they're not subhuman. They're not, you know. And that's why I think we haven't had a Third World War.
Yeah.
Is because we know that citizens around the world are generally, people are generally the same. It's just, you know, the wrong people at the top.
Yeah. And but then from there, after all that chaos, you know, that's what a new system was born. And the immigrants, for example, they just my parents migrated to South America, and their family system that they created was one of totally different of what they grew up with. You know, they basically don't believe in any government, religion, or in history book, and they just create their own thing, and that's how we. You know, me and my siblings came up, and mm-hmm. they kept changing us from school to school. We went all private school, and I went to Italian school, German school, American school, Venezuelan school, all throughout, because they didn't trust really what I was learning, and they mm-hmm. wanted me to get a global vision of what education, you know, should have been in my head. So even from that chaos, traumatized, post-traumatic stress, people, if you will, came a little system
mm-hmm.
that was under their control, and that's where I wanted to get in there.
Yeah, and I there's a lot of more cases. Maybe I'll do a second book eventually using more cases of that, because it's all around the world in the past. You had societies that were very decentralized, like the Jewish people. They had a tribal leader. They didn't have a government. Eventually, the people looked around and said, well, we want a king, too. And if you read Samuel's in the Bible, God said, you really shouldn't have a king. He's going to do this to you. He's going to do that to you. And he's going to hurt you. And but the people wanted a king, so eventually they got a government. But for centuries, Jewish people did not have, it was sort of a stateless tribal society.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all over the world. Iceland was that way for a long time, ancient Iceland, ancient Ireland, and many, many stateless societies in Africa that were doing fairly well. They had laws. They had common law. They just didn't have, either no central government or the king had no power.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through direct podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with L.K. Samuels, author of In Defense of Chaos. Stay tuned, because we're going to continue this interesting, insightful, and fun conversation with L.K. about social chaos and how it even applies to our lives. But in the meantime, you can check out his book, In Defense of Chaos, by visiting his website at www.lksamuels.com, and that is lksamuels.com. You know, being a peace activist yourself and knowing all this about organized systems, whether they come from chaos organizing system or it comes from the linear that's the other way around,
mm-hmm.
Is peace really achievable?
Well, again, they have been. I mean, the Jewish people had it for ancient Ireland, I think, for about, 500-600 years, basically, had a open, a very open system, and not much political, if any. We've had, the colonies were that way. The colonies had almost no government during the colonial period and after the colonial period. I mean, when Jefferson became president, the first thing he did, this was a big promise, was to get rid of all federal taxes. All direct federal taxes. We had 80 years in this country with no federal taxes upon citizens, no direct. And they brought in money through tariffs and selling land and other things. So we have, that's a Jeffersonian tradition, is to have, if there's going to be some authority, it's going to be at the local level, not the national. Switzerland's is that same way. Switzerland has no really central government. They have a president for 1 year. He's a chairman of the Seven Sages. There's hardly any executive branch.
Well, so is it because these changes that happen, is it a natural lifetime of each system that comes to an end and then starts no matter whether? I just want to see how.
Well, the emergence, if you follow it, and this is not as much in my book, a little bit, is how the Western movement began. Basically, you had vacant land, mostly vacant land. You had people there. You had an economy. Things were doing well. And then all of a sudden, the system begins to morph into a top-down system instead of a bottom-up. Eventually, it gets so bad, people leave, and they go to another area and form another city. So you can look at Mesopotamia. Then you can look at Egypt, Greece, Rome, you know, France, England, United States, all moving to lands that are basically vacant because there is no system there. You can start from scratch. And the economics are very open, very, you know, a lot of wealth. You know, it's that Western movement. They're looking for a place that doesn't have a tyrannical system.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but we have nowhere to go now.
Yeah, and eventually it happens.
Yeah, that's that self-organizing system. People come together and decide to do something, and they agree upon themselves. I talk about Rome. Rome started out by kicking out the monarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And they based their system on Athens, democratic Athens. And they had assemblies of 6,000 people, a number of committees. That was the government of Rome, not the Senate. There was no emperor. And eventually, way pyramid kind of form, power pyramids, eventually the Senate took the power away from the assembly. And then eventually the emperor took the power away from the Senate. And eventually the military was calling all the shots. And then when Rome, the city itself, fell, a city of 2 to 3 million people, when it finally fell, it was a ghost town. One historian said 12,000 people. That's about it in Rome.
It really
imploded. They had price controls. I mean, if you tried to sell a little trinket somewhere for higher than the price the government said it was, your head would be chopped off.
Yeah, it almost seems that the our nature to control things really happens when
yes.
things get more complex.
That's right. I have a whole chapter on control. What is
mm-hmm.
control? And I use an example like a mother-in-law that's always griping to her children and other relatives that, you know, you got to do this, you got to do that. Well, guess what happens? No one's going to invite her anymore to social outings
yeah.
or picnics or anything like that. And she'll get the exact opposite as she wants. You'll get more control by not trying to control.
Yeah, I actually learned my lesson with my teenagers. I realized that the more I wanted them to live my way, the less they would do it. So
that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
I have people that envy me because my children comes over all the time, taking their children with them over to my place to have barbecues and parties, and they can't even get their child to come to their house to have a lunch or go out to dinner or something.
Yeah.
You know, they all come over here because I'm fairly open. As long as I don't hurt anybody or do anything really dangerous, if they want to play computer games all night and go out and get pizza, it's up to them. You know, later teenagers and they're
yeah.
in their 20s. But I have pretty good relations with them. You know, they're always calling me. In fact, sometimes they call me too much.
I know.
And I got friends are saying, my son will never call me.
I know. I was trying to get rid of mine, and it ended up being that my daughter decided to go to college here and live at home, and my other daughter is deciding to come back here and live at home for her master's degree. I'm like, no.
Well, it's
that's
like
not
these,
what
I've
I
known
meant.
This for, yeah, I've known this idea for a long time, going back 20, 30 years or more. You know, there's an old story about trying to capture a butterfly, grab it, make sure it's so beautiful, not letting it go. But then if you keep trying to trap it and hold it, all it want to do will get away. And you really don't have it. You want it to be around you because you're treating it well. You're letting it fly around. You know, it's kind of a metaphor for, liberty
yeah.
in a sense. And what is liberty? And that is letting people make choices, even the bad choices. You know, people have to realize you learn more from your mistakes than you do from your successes.
It is true. And each choice creates its own butterfly effect. And
Yes, butterfly, yeah, it's true.
Yeah, so.
I didn't mean to really go there, but okay, we're there. Well, here's one thing I'd like to let your people know, and I use it on my talks. And it basically what it talks about is control in a sense, or how can we get control? You know, chaos is really sensitivity to initial conditions that, small things can have big effect. But the problem is nobody can precisely predict the future.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, Stephen Hawking talks about that. Here's a little quote, and people love this quote. Professor Hawking said, "One certainly cannot predict future events exactly if one cannot even measure the present state of the universe precisely."
Mm-hmm.
And so what I often, say to people is that complexity, and remember, complexity science is part of chaos theory, the more something is complex, the more unpredictable, which means it's more uncontrollable. You cannot control what you cannot predict, and we cannot really predict very well. We can do probabilities, but we really can't predict. And yet you have people out there, you know, you've got laws out there 2,000-3,000 pages long with legalese, small type, you know, and they're trying to predict the future. They're etching in stone, this will happen now, this will happen then, this, you know, and you're saying to yourself, well, that's not very, you know, evolutionary, that, you know, things evolving to hopefully, you know, to better things. So, you know, you have a political system that is basically linear, and they're saying this is how reality will be. They don't even read the bills, the Congress or the state. Sometimes they don't even write them and they pass them. In California, sometimes they'll budget. So just do an outline of the budget, pass it, and then after they pass it, then they fill out all the other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I was talking about that. They're so detached from the reality that I don't think that even if they read it, they will really grasp it. Anyway.
Well, they never do. Staff may do it, but they don't have time to read it. I go out and fundraise or something. So here you have people basically blind telling you what reality is. When they don't read it, they don't even know what it is. They could get it correct, at least, you know, occasionally. But even if today is correct, tomorrow may be a whole different thing because things, one constant universe is change.
Yeah.
And they don't allow change. Now, people say, oh, you can just, you know, rework the bill. Well, they don't usually do that, I mean, the law. It's very hard to change the law. And if they do, they just add more, you know, words in to change a little here and change there, and it could cause even more problems.
Yeah. A good example of this is a study I did when I was in college for one of my political science, and we were talking about social benefits. And so the government was trying to control the overpopulation of people, you know, having all these fatherless children in the poverty level communities. And so they started with giving out for free birth control pills on the social security system, especially on the Native Americans of my area, the Guajiran tribe to be specific, and it was not working. They were the population was growing the same, and nobody understood what was going on. And so as a project, we started going and taking all this survey. We surveyed the population, and we started trying to figure out what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And basically our conclusion was that the women decided that because they were not the ones sleeping around creating all these babies, it was their husbands who were not being faithful. They wouldn't take the birth control pill. They would give it to them to take it because they were the ones that they needed to have babies.
I mean, they would find the mistress, basically, and make sure the mistress would have...
No, they would give it to their husbands for him to take the pill.
Oh, take the... wait, the husband takes the pill. I thought the female took the...
The female was supposed to take it. But they were not taking it because why would they have to take medication when it was him who was making all the babies?
Yeah. Wow, that's...
They would give it to them. That was how detached the policy was with what the education was at that
that's
time
incredible.
And the knowledge about birth control.
Yeah. Well, they didn't have any. They had some bureaucrat write it up or some lobbyist write it up for who knows what political economic reasons, and they don't know. There's over a million laws out there. I think I read somewhere where it's passed over a million laws now in the books, I guess, local and state and federal. But you know, they conflict with each other. They don't know what they're doing. And then if they did, it would change, and pretty soon it wouldn't do it. That's why I have a whole chapter on boomerang effect, you know, system failure. Why do systems fail? And, you know, it's really fascinating. Because most of the laws you look at, you see what they said they're going to do, and you look 10 years later, often it does the exact opposite.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really crazy. I mean, you could do a comedy routine on it.
Yeah. And it is so true. Everything that when you try to control something and you have a result list in your mind of what you're going to be getting back from all the mechanism that you're putting in place, that this will happen and then this will happen, yeah, you need a pointer there. Okay, so when nothing of those happen, then I will do this and I will do that because that's usually how it is.
Yeah, that's why it's always best to have very few laws. Think of the U.S. Constitution. It's only 4 pages.
Yeah.
Big pages. I mean, you put it out on a word processor. I think it's maybe 8 pages. And then you look at the EU, the European Union. Their one was, I think, almost 1,000 pages. I remember reading somewhere, actually, the European Union Constitution had in it, somewhere, maybe in an index, what the temperature of shaving cream for Italian barbers. Can you imagine that in the Constitution, telling what temperature the shaving cream has to be?
That's crazy.
I mean, it's crazy. You know, when the new material comes out or whatever. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, you want people to be able to do things at their local level and not have this control from top down. And it's very destructive. It can destroy your economy because nobody knows what the right way is. You got to let it basically happen. Let people make decisions. It's like Microsoft when they came out with their operating system years ago. There used to be hundreds of them. And, you know, one won. You know, you voted with your wallet and you said, this is the one.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, some people talked at the time about having the system run by the government. The government would say, okay, this will be the operating system from now on. Of course, it wouldn't advance anymore probably because now you had a monopoly. I mean, Microsoft does have somewhat of a monopoly, but there's Linux, there's other systems too, but the price is about the same, you know, so.
Yeah. I wish we could keep talking about this all day. Unfortunately, we are on a time limit, and I just want to make sure our listeners know where to find your book. And again, the title is In Defense of Chaos by Elke Samuels. And you can know more about Elke and his books and writings. And
and you get the book, too.
Yes, and you can get it there, too, at www.elkesamuels.com.
Yes.
I really encourage everybody to check it out. I loved it. I must say it's a very easy book to read. You made it possible for the average person to understand all this scientific mumbo-jumbo that sounds like sometimes in some of us. I really want to ask you one thing, though, before we go, because I'm very curious about this. So you wrote this big book about chaology, and you made it so simple that all of us can read it and understand what it is. What is your hope that the average reader will get from your book?
The idea that basically don't try to control your own neighbor. Don't think that you're superior and your word is God, and just because you don't like what your neighbor is doing, that you have to tell him what to do in his bedroom or his pocketbook or whatever it is. You know, mind your own business and try not to control your children, try not to control other people, you know, try to make it a neutral type of world where people will discuss things. And, you know, if you don't like what your neighbor is doing, just say, well, that's his life.
Very well said. And I really think that you have a point there. And to give you a very visual example from my own life, all of my life with my two daughters, my only control thing was I didn't want them to get any tattoos or piercings on their face. What did they do as soon as they were of age and they had their own money?
Oh, God.
Yes. Tattoos and piercings. So at that point, I decided, you know what, it's not even worth trying. I can control what I do with my body. There's just no way I can control what anybody else does.
That's true, but a lot of people still do it, and they do it in a big way. And people need to know that's not the original American way. We didn't have any laws against, you know, drug use. I mean, you know, other things, and that only came out about 100 years ago, for example. You know, we even though we were more religious a long time ago, there is far, far less controls on society. Maybe there were social controls that you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't get pregnant, that, but there wasn't laws. It wasn't codified.
Yeah. So just, people, use your common sense.
Use your common sense and mind your own business.
Exactly. Thank you so much for being with us. Again, the book is called In Defense of Chaos, and check it out at www.lksamuels.com. And it's also, I guess, available in Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
That's true, but I don't get a hard anything from Amazon or my publisher. They suck up all the...
No, check it out on your website. It's better because there's other writings there that they can check out that you have on your website.
That's
that
right.
Are no other place, so... Again, LK, thank you so much for being here. And to you listeners, thank you so much for listening. And until next time.